I'm sorry, Clove. How long am I going to be like this?
I don't know. The effects of Ophelomar euphoria.
Check?
She winked at me, grinning. Followed by mania. Some delirium if your dose was high enough, then exhaustion.
Maybe I'll sleep through the night for once, she said.
You can't seriously expect to kill this thing. What are you going to use? A pointy stick?
I can't just let it run wild. Trebon's only about 5 miles from here, and there's smaller farms closer than that. Think of the damage it would do.
But how? She repeated. How do you kill a thing like that?
I turned to the tiny shed. If we're lucky, this fellow had the good sense to buy a spare crossbow. I began to dig around, throwing stuff out the door. Stirring paddles, buckets, scrapers, spade, more buckets, a barrel. The barrel was about the size of a small keg of ale. I carried it outside the shed and pried off the lid. In the bottom was an oilcloth sack containing a large gummy mass of black Denna resin, at least 4 times as much as Denna and I had already scraped together. I pulled out the sack and rested it on the ground, holding it open for Denna to look. She peered in, gasped, then jumped up and down a little bit.
Now I can buy a pony,
she said, laughing. I don't know about a pony, I said, doing some calculations in my head, but I think before we split up the money we should buy you a good half harp out of this, I said. Not some sad liar.
Yes,
Denna said. Then she threw her arms around me in a wild, delighted hug.
And we'll get you.
She looked at me curiously, her sooty face inches away from my face. What do you want? Before I could say anything, do anything, the Dracus roared. Chapter 78 Poison. The roar of the Dracus was like a trumpet, if you can imagine a trumpet as big as a house and made of stone and thunder and molten lead. I didn't feel it in my chest. I felt it in my feet as the earth shook with it. The roar made us jump nearly out of our skins. The top of Denna's head banged into my nose and I staggered, blinded with pain. Denna didn't notice as she was busy tripping and falling over into a loose, laughing tangle of arms and legs. As I helped Denna to her feet, I heard a distant crashing, and we made our way carefully back up to the lookout. The Dracus was cavorting, bounding around like a drunken dog, knocking over trees like a boy would topple cornstalks in a field. I watched breathlessly as it came to an ancient oak tree 100 years old and massive as a greystone. The Dracus reared up and brought its front legs down on one of the lower branches, as if it wanted to climb. The branch, as big as a tree itself, practically exploded. The Dracus reared again, coming down hard on the tree. I watched, certain that it was about to impale itself on the broken limb, but the jagged spear of hard wood barely dimpled its chest before splintering. The Dracus crashed into the trunk, and though it didn't snap, it fractured with a sound like a crack of lightning. The Dracus threw itself around, hopped and fell, rolling over jagged spurs of rock. It belched a huge gout of flame and charged the fractured oak tree again, striking with its great blunt wedge of a head. This time, it knocked the tree over, causing an explosion of earth and rock as the tree's roots tore out of the ground. All I could think of was the futility of trying to hurt this creature. It was bringing more force to bear against itself than I could ever hope to muster.
There's no way we can kill that, I said. It would be like trying to attack a thunderstorm. How could we possibly hurt it?
We lure her over the side of a cliff,
Denna said matter-of-factly.
She? I asked. Why do you think it's a she? Why do you think it's a he?
She replied, then shook her head as if to clear it.
Never mind, it doesn't matter. We know it's drawn to fires. We just build one and hang it from a branch.
She pointed to a few trees overhanging the cliff below.
Then, when it rushes over to put it out...
She made a pantomime with both hands of something falling.
Do you think even that would hurt it?
I asked dubiously.
Well, Denna said, when you flick an ant off a table, it doesn't get hurt, even though for an ant, that has to be like dropping off a cliff. But if one of us jumped off a roof, we'd get hurt because we're heavier. It makes sense that bigger things fall even harder.
She gave a pointed look down at the Dracus.
You don't get much bigger than that.
She was right, of course. She was talking about the square cube ratio, though she didn't know what to call it.
It should at least injure it, Denner continued. Then, I don't know, we could roll rocks down onto it or something.
She looked at me.
What? Is there something wrong with my idea?
It's not very heroic, I said dismissively. I was expecting something with a little more flair.
Well, I left my armor and warhorse at home, she said. You're just upset because your big university brain couldn't think of a way, and my plan is brilliant.
She pointed behind us to the Box Canyon.
We'll build the fire in one of those metal pans. They're wide and shallow, and they'll take the heat. Was there any rope in that shed?
I felt the familiar sinking feeling in my gut. No, I don't think so. Denner patted me on the arm.
Don't look like that. When it leaves, we'll check the wreckage of the house. I'll bet there's some rope in there.
She looked at the Dracus.
Honestly, I know how she feels. I feel a little like running around and jumping on things too.
That's the mania I was talking about, I said. After a quarter hour, the Dracus left the valley. Only then did Denner and I emerge from our hiding place, me carrying my travel sack, she with the heavy oilskin bag that held all the resin we'd found, nearly a full bushel of it.
Give me your lodestone, she said, setting down the sack.
I handed it over.
You find some rope. I'm going to get you a present.
She skipped away lightly, her dark hair flying behind her. I made a quick search of the house, holding my breath as much as possible. I found a hatchet, broken crockery, a barrel of wormy flour, a mildewy straw tick, a ball of twine, but no rope. Denner gave a delighted shout from the trees, ran up to me, and pressed a black scale into my hand. It was warm with the sun, slightly larger than hers, but more oval than tear-shaped.
Thank you kindly, milady.
She bobbed a charming curtsy, grinning.
Rope?
I held up a ball of rough twine. This is as close as I could find, sorry. Denner frowned, then shrugged it off.
Oh, well, your turn for a plan. You have any strange and wonderful magics from the university? Any dark powers better left alone?
I turned the scale over in my hands and thought about it. I had wax, and this scale would make as good a link as any hair. I could make a simulacrum of the Dracus. But then what? A hot foot wasn't going to bother a creature that was perfectly comfortable lying on a bed of coals. But there are more sinister things you can do with a mommet. Things no good arcanist was ever supposed to consider. Things with pins and knives that would leave a man bleeding, even though he was miles away. True malfeasance. I looked at the scale in my hand, considering it. The thing was mostly iron and thicker than my palm in the middle. Even with a mommet and a hot fire for energy, I didn't know if I could make it through the scales to hurt the thing. Worst of all, if I tried, I wouldn't know if it had worked. I couldn't bear the thought of sitting idly by some fire, sticking pins into a wax doll while miles away a drug-crazed Dracus rolled in the flaming wreckage of some innocent family's farm. No, I said, no magic I can think of.
We can go tell the constable that he needs to deputize about a dozen men with bows to come kill a drug-crazed, big-as-a-house dragon chicken.
It came to me in a flash.
Poison, I said. We'll have to poison it. You've got 2 quarts of arsenic on you?
She asked skeptically.
Would that even be enough for something as big as that?
Not arsenic. I nudged the oilskin sack with my foot. She looked down.
Oh,
she said, crestfallen.
What about my pony?
You'll probably have to skip your pony, I said. But we'll still have enough to buy you a half harp. In fact, I bet we'll be able to make even more money from the Dracus's body. The scales will be worth a lot, and the naturalists at the university will love to be able—
You don't need to sell me, she said. I know it's the right thing to do.
She looked up at me and grinned.
Besides, we get to be heroes and kill the dragon. Its treasure is just a perk.
I laughed. Right then, I said. I think we should head back to the Greystone Hill and build a fire there to lure it in. Denner looked puzzled.
Why? We know it's going to come back here. Why don't we just camp here and wait?
I shook my head. Look at how many Denner trees are left. She looked around.
It ate all of them?
I nodded. If we kill it this evening, we can be back in Trebon by tonight, I said. I'm tired of sleeping outdoors. I want to get a bath, a hot meal, and a real bed.
"You're lying again," she said cheerfully. "Your delivery's getting better, but to me you're clear as a shallow stream."
She prodded my chest with a finger.
"Tell me the truth."
"I want to get you back to Trayvon," I said, "just in case you ate more resin than is good for you. I wouldn't trust any doctor living there, but they probably have some medicines I could use, just in case."
"My hero,"
Denna smiled.
"You're sweet, but I feel fine."
I reached out and flicked her ear with the tip of my finger, hard. Her hand went to the side of her head, her expression outraged.
"Ow!" "Oh."
She looked confused. "Doesn't hurt at all, does it?"
"No,"
she said. "Here is the truth," I said seriously. "I think you're going to be fine, but I don't know for certain. I don't know how much of that stuff you have left working its way into your system. In an hour, I'll have a better idea, but if something goes wrong, I'd rather be an hour closer to Trayvon. It means I won't have to carry you as far." I looked her square in the eye. "I don't gamble with the lives of people I care for." She listened to me, her expression somber. Then the grin blossomed back onto her face.
"I like your manly bravado," she said. "Do it some more."
Chapter 79 Sweet Talk. It took us about 2 hours to get back to the Greystone Hill. It would have been faster, but Denna's mania was growing stronger, and all her extra energy was more of a hindrance than a help. She was highly distractible, and prone to larking off in her own direction if she saw something interesting. We crossed the same small stream that we had before, and, despite the fact that it wasn't much more than ankle deep, Denna insisted on bathing. I washed up a little, then moved a discreet distance away and listened to her sing several rather racy songs. She also made several none too subtle invitations that I could join her in the water. Needless to say, I kept my distance. There are names for people who take advantage of women who are not in full control of themselves, and none of those names will ever rightfully be applied to me. Once we reached the peak of the Greystone Hill, I put Denna's surplus of energy to use and sent her to gather firewood while I made an even larger fire pit than our previous one. The bigger the fire, the quicker it would draw the drakkers close. I sat down next to the oilskin bag and opened it. The resin gave off an earthy smell, like sweet smoky mulch. Denna returned to the top of the hill and dropped an armload of wood.
"How much of that are you going to use?" she asked.
"I still have to figure that out," I said. "It's going to require some guesswork."
"Just give him all of it," Denna said. "Better safe than sorry."
I shook my head. "There's no reason to go that far. It would just be wasteful. Besides, the resin makes a powerful painkiller when properly refined. People could use the medicine."
"And you could use the money," Denna said.
"I could," I admitted, "but honestly, I was thinking more about your harp. You lost your lyre in that fire. I know what it's like to be without an instrument."
"Did you ever hear the story about the boy with the golden arrows?"
Denna asked.
"That always bothered me when I was young. You must want to kill someone really badly to shoot a gold arrow at him. Why not just keep the gold and go home?"
"It certainly shines a new light on that story," I said, looking down at the sack. I guessed this much Denna resin would be worth at least 50 talents to an apothecary, maybe as much as 100, depending on how refined it was. Denna shrugged and headed back into the trees for more firewood, and I began the elaborate guesswork of how much Denna it would take to poison a 5-ton lizard. It was a nightmare of educated guessery, complicated by the fact that I had no way to make accurate measurements. I started with a bead the size of the last digit of my little finger, my guess as to how much resin Denna had actually swallowed. However, Denna had been liberally dosed with charcoal, which effectively reduced that by half. I was left with a ball of black resin slightly larger than a pea. But that was just the amount required to make a human girl euphoric and energetic. I wanted to kill the drakkers. For that, I tripled the dose, then tripled it again to be sure. The end result was a ball the size of a large, ripe grape. I guessed the drakkers weighed 5 tons, 800 stone, I guessed Denner at 8 or 9 stone, 8 to be on the safe side. That meant I needed 100 times that grape-sized dose to kill the Drakkers. I made 10 grape-sized pellets, then mashed them together. It was the size of an apricot. I made 9 more apricot-sized balls and set them in the wooden bucket we had brought from the Denner plantation. Denner dropped another load of wood and peered down into the bucket.
"That's it?" she asked. "It doesn't look like very much."
She was right. It didn't look like much at all compared to the Drakkers' huge bulk. I explained how I'd come up with my estimate. She nodded.
"That seems about right, I guess, but don't forget that it's been eating trees for the better part of a month. It probably has a tolerance."
I nodded and added 5 more apricot-sized balls to the bucket.
"And it might be tougher than you think. The resin might work different on lizards."
I nodded again and added another 5 balls to the bucket. Then, after a moment's consideration, I added 1 more.
"That brings us up to 21, I explained. "A good number, 3 7s.
"Nothing wrong with having luck on your side,"
Denner agreed.
"We want it to die quickly, too," I said. "It will be more humane for the Drakkers and safer for us."
Denner looked at me.
"So we double it?"
I nodded, and she headed back into the trees while I made another 21 balls and dropped them into the bucket. She came back with more wood just as I was rolling up the last ball. I packed the resin down into the bottom of the bucket.
"That should be more than enough," I said.
"That much Ophelum would kill the entire population of Trabon twice over." Denner and I looked at the bucket. It contained about a third of all the resin we'd found. What was left in the oilskin sack would be enough to buy Denner a half harp, pay off my debt to Devi, and still have enough left over so that we could live comfortably for months. I thought of buying new clothes, a full set of new strings for my lute, a bottle of Avanish fruit wine. I thought of the Drakkers brushing aside trees as if they were sheaves of wheat, shattering them casually with its weight.
"We should double it again," Denner said, echoing my own thoughts, "just to be sure."
I doubled it yet again, rolling out another 42 balls of the resin, while Denner fetched armload after armload of wood. I got the fire blazing just as the rain started to come down. We built it larger than our last one with the hope that a brighter fire would attract the Drakkers more quickly. I wanted to get Denner back to the relative safety of Trabon as soon as possible. Lastly, I cobbled together a rough ladder using the hatchet and twine I'd found. It was ugly but serviceable, and I leaned it up against the side of the greystone arch. This time, Denner and I would have an easy route to safety. Our dinner was nowhere near as grand as last night's. We made do with the last of my now stale flatbread, dried meat, and the last potatoes baked on the edge of the fire. While we ate, I told Denner the full story of the fire in the fishery, partly because I was young and male and desperately wanted to impress her, but I also wanted to make it clear that I had missed our lunch due to circumstances completely outside my control. She was the perfect audience, attentive and gasping at all the right moments. I was no longer worried about her overdosing. After gathering a small mountain of firewood, her mania was fading, leaving her in a content, almost dreamy lethargy. Still, I knew the after-effects of the drug would leave her exhausted and weak. I wanted her safely in bed in Trabon for her recovery. After we finished eating, I made my way over to where she sat with her back against one of the greystones. I cuffed up my shirt sleeves.
"All right, I need to check you over," I said pompously.
She smiled lazily at me, her eyes half closed.
"You really do know how to sweet-talk a girl, don't you?"
I felt for her pulse in the hollow of her slender throat. It was slow but steady. She shied away a little from my touch.
"Oh, you tickle."
"How do you feel?" I asked.
"Tired,"
she said, her voice slightly slurred.
"Good and tired and a little cold."
While this wasn't unexpected, it was still a little surprising considering the fact that we were only feet away from a blazing bonfire. I fetched the extra blanket from my bag and brought it back to her. She snuggled into it. I leaned close so that I could look into her eyes. Her pupils were still wide and sluggish, but no more than before. She reached up and lay her hand on my cheek.
"You have the sweetest face," she said, looking at me dreamily. "It's like the perfect kitchen."
I fought not to smile. This was the delirium. She'd fade in and out of it before the profound exhaustion dragged her down into unconsciousness. If you see someone spouting nonsense to themselves in an alleyway in Tarbin, odds are they're not actually crazy, just a sweet eater, deranged by too much dinner.
"A kitchen?"
"Yes,"
she said. "Everything matches, and the sugar bowl is right where it should be."
"How does it feel when you breathe?" I asked.
"Normal,"
she said easily.
"Tight, but normal."
My heart beat a little faster at that.
"What do you mean by that?"
"I have trouble breathing," she said. "My chest gets tight sometimes, and it's like breathing through pudding."
She laughed.
"Did I say pudding? I meant molasses, like a sweet molasses pudding."
I fought off the urge to point out angrily that I'd asked her to tell me if she felt anything wrong with her breathing.
"Is it hard to breathe now?"
She shrugged indifferently.
"I need to listen to your breathing," I said, "but I don't have any tools here, so if you could unbutton your shirt a little, I'll need to press my ear against your chest."
Denna rolled her eyes and unbuttoned more of her shirt than was altogether necessary.
"Now that one is entirely new,"
she said archly, sounding for a moment like her normal self.
"I've never had anyone try that before."
I turned and pressed my ear up against her breastbone.
"What does my heart sound like?" she asked.
"It's slow but strong," I said. "It's a good heart."
"Is it saying anything?"
"Nothing I can hear," I said.
"Listen harder."
"Take a few deep breaths and don't talk," I said. "I need to listen to your breathing." I listened. The air rushed in, and I felt one of her breasts pressing against my arm. She exhaled, and I felt her breath warm against the back of my neck. Goose flesh broke out over my whole body. I could picture Arwill's disapproving stare. I closed my eyes and tried to concentrate on what I was doing. In and out, it was like listening to the wind through the trees. In and out, I could hear a faint crackling, like paper crumpling, like a faint sigh. But there was no wetness, no bubbling.
"Your hair smells really nice," she said.
I sat up. "You're fine," I said. "Make sure to let me know if it gets any worse or feels different." She nodded amiably, smiling dreamily. Irritated that the Draka seemed to be taking its sweet time making an appearance, I heaped more wood on the fire. I looked out at the northern bluffs, but there was nothing to see in the dim light but the outlines of trees and rocks. Denna laughed suddenly.
"Did I call your face a sugar bowl or something?"
she asked, peering at me.
"Am I even making any sense right now?"
"It's just a little delirium," I reassured her. "You'll fade in and out of it before you go to sleep."
"I hope it's as much fun for you as it is for me,"
she said, pulling the blanket closer around herself.
"It's like a cottony dream, but not as warm."
I climbed the ladder to the top of the greystone, where we had stashed our possessions. I took a handful of the Denna resin out of the oilskin sack, carried it down, and threw it on the edge of the fire. It burned sullenly, giving off an acrid smoke that the wind brushed away to the north and west, toward the unseen bluffs. Hopefully the Drakas would smell it and come running.
"I had pneumonia when I was a tiny baby,"
Denna said with no particular inflection.
"That's why my lungs aren't good. It's horrible not being able to breathe sometimes."
Denna's eyes were half closed as she continued, almost as if she were talking to herself.
"I stopped breathing for 2 minutes and died. Sometimes I wonder if this all isn't some sort of mistake, if I should be dead. But if it isn't a mistake, I have to be here for a reason. But if there is a reason, I don't know what that reason is."
There was the distinct possibility that she didn't even realize that she was talking, and an even greater possibility that most of the important parts of her brain were already asleep, and she wouldn't remember any of what was happening now in the morning. Since I didn't know how to respond, I simply nodded.
That's the first thing you said to me. I was just wondering why you're here. My 7 words. I've been wondering the same thing for so long.
The sun, already hidden by the clouds, finally set behind the western mountains. As the landscape faded into darkness, the top of this small hill felt like an island in a great ocean of night. Denna was beginning to nod where she sat, her head slowly sinking to her chest, then bobbing back up. I walked over and held out my hand.
Come on. The Drakus will be here soon. We should get up onto the stones.
She nodded and came to her feet, blanket still wrapped around her. I followed her to the ladder, and she made her slow, stumbling way up to the top of the greystone. It was chilly up on the stone, away from the fire. The wind brushed past, making the slight chill worse. I spread one blanket across the stone, and she sat down, huddled in the other blanket. The cold seemed to rouse her a little, and she looked around peevishly, shivering.
Damn chicken, come eat your dinner, I'm cold.
I was hoping to have you tucked into a warm bed in Trebon by now, I admitted. So much for my brilliant plan.
You always know where you're doing, she said muzzily. You're important with your green eyes looking at me like I mean something. It's okay that you have better things to do.
It's enough that I get you sometimes, once in a while.
I know I'm lucky for that, to get you just a little.
I nodded agreeably, as I watched the hillside for signs of the Drakus. We sat for a while longer, staring off into the dark. Denna nodded a little, then pulled herself upright again, and fought off another violent shiver.
I know you don't think of me, she trailed off.
It's best to humor people in delirium, lest they turn violent.
I think about you all the time, Denna, I said.
Don't patronize me,
she said crossly. Then her tone softened again.
You don't think of me like that. That's fine. But if you're cold, too, you could come over here and put your arms around me. Just a little.
My heart in my mouth. I moved closer and sat behind her, wrapping my arms around her.
That's nice, she said, relaxing. I feel like I've always been cold.
We sat looking to the north. She leaned against me, delightful in my arms. I drew shallow breaths, not wanting to disturb her. Denna stirred slightly, murmuring,
"You're so gentle. You never push."
She trailed off again, resting more heavily against my chest. Then she roused herself.
You could, you know, push more, just a little.
I sat there in the dark, holding her sleeping body in my arms. She was soft and warm, indescribably precious. I had never held a woman before. After a few moments, my back began to ache with the pressure of supporting her weight and my own. My legs started to go numb. Her hair tickled my nose. Still, I didn't move for fear of ruining this, the most wonderful moment of my life. Denna shifted in her sleep, then started to slide sideways and jerked awake.
Lie down,
she said, her voice clear again. She fumbled with the blanket, pulling it away so it was no longer between us.
Come on. You've got to be cold, too. You're not a priest, so you're not going to get in trouble for it. We'll be fine. Just a little fine in the cold.
I put my arms around her, and she draped the blanket over both of us. We lay on our sides, like spoons nesting in a drawer. My arm ended up under her head, like a pillow. She curled snugly along the inside of my body, so easy and natural, as if she had been designed to fit there. As I lay there, I realized I had been wrong before. This was the most wonderful moment of my life. Denna stirred in her sleep.
I know you didn't mean it,
she said clearly.
You mean what?
I asked softly. Her voice was different, no longer dreamy and tired. I wondered if he was talking in her sleep.
Before, you said you'd knock me down and make me eat coals. You'd never hit me.
She turned her head a little.
You wouldn't, would you? Not even if it was for my own good.
I felt a chill go through me.
What do you mean?
There was a long pause, and I was beginning to think she'd fallen asleep when she spoke up again.
I didn't tell you everything. I know Ash didn't die at the farm. When I was heading toward the fire, he found me. He came back and said that everyone was dead. He said that people would be suspicious if I was the only one who survived.
I felt a hard, dark anger rise up in me. I knew what came next, but I let her talk. I didn't want to hear it, but I knew she needed to tell someone.
He didn't just do it out of the blue, she said. He made sure it was what I really wanted. I knew it wouldn't look convincing if I did it to myself. He made sure I really wanted him to. He made me ask him to hit me, just to be sure. And he was right.
She didn't move at all as she spoke.
Even this way, they thought I had something to do with it. If he hadn't done it, I might be in jail right now. They would have hanged me.
My stomach churned acid. Denner, I said, a man who could do that to you, he's not worth your time. Not one moment of it. It's not a matter of him being only half a loaf. He's rotten through. You deserve better.
Who knows what I deserve, she said. He's not my best loaf. He's it. Him or hungry.
You have other options, I said, then stalled, thinking of my conversation with Diok.
I've got you,
she said dreamily. I could hear the warm, sleepy smile in her voice, like a child tucked into bed.
Will you be my dark-eyed Prince Gallant and protect me from pigs? Sing to me. Whisk me away to tall trees.
She trailed off to nothing.
I will, I said, but I could tell by the heavy weight of her against my arm that she had finally fallen asleep.
Chapter 80. Touching Iron. I lay awake, feeling Denner's gentle breath against my arm. I couldn't have slept even if I'd wanted to. The closeness of her filled me with a crackling energy, a low warmth, a gentle thrumming hum. I lay awake, savoring it, every moment precious as a jewel. Then I heard the distant crack of a breaking branch, then another. Earlier I wanted nothing more than the Drakus to hurry to our fire. Now I would have traded my right hand to have it go on its merry way for another 5 minutes. Still it came. I began gently untangling myself from Denner. She barely stirred in her sleep. Denner? I shook her gently, then harder. Nothing. I wasn't surprised. There are few things deeper than a sweet eater's sleep. I covered her in the blanket, then set my travel sack on one side, the oilskin bag on the other, like bookends. If she rolled in her sleep, she would butt into these before getting close to the edge of the greystone. I moved to the other side of the stone and looked out to the north. The clouds were still thick overhead, so I couldn't see anything outside the circle of firelight. Feeling carefully with my fingers, I located the piece of twine I had laid across the top of the greystone. The other end was tied to the rope handle of the wooden bucket below, midway between the fire and the greystones. My main fear was that the Drakus might accidentally crush the bucket before it smelled it. I planned to haul the bucket to safety if that happened, then cast it out again. Denner had laughed at my plan, referring to it as chicken fishing. The Drakus came to the top of the hill, moving noisily through the brush. It stopped just inside the circle of firelight, Its dark eyes shone red, and there was red on its scales. It made a deep huffing sound and began to circle the fire, slowly rocking its head back and forth. It blew a wide plume of fire in what I was coming to recognize as either some sort of greeting or a challenge. It darted towards our fire. Despite the fact that I'd watched it at some length, I was still surprised by how quickly the huge animal could move. It pulled up short of the fire, huffed again, then advanced on the bucket. Despite the fact that the bucket was sturdy wood and built to hold at least 2 gallons, it looked as tiny as a teacup next to the Drax's massive head. It sniffed again, then butted the bucket with its nose tipping it over. The bucket rolled in a half circle, but I'd packed the sticky resin in tightly. The Drakus took another step, huffed again, and took the whole thing into its mouth. I was so relieved that I almost forgot to let go of the twine. It was jerked out of my hands as the Drakus chewed the bucket a little, crushing it in its massive jaws. Then it worked its head up and down, forcing the sticky mass down its gullet. I breathed a huge sigh of relief and sat down to watch as the Drakus circled the fire. It gushed out a billow of blue flame, then another, then turned and rolled in the fire, wriggling and crushing it into the dirt. Once the fire was flattened, the Drakus began to follow the same pattern as before. It sought out the scattered pieces of the fire, rolled in them until they were extinguished, then ate the wood. I could almost imagine each new stick and stump it swallowed forcing the denner resin deeper into its gizzard, mixing it around, breaking it up, forcing it to dissolve. A quarter hour passed as I watched it complete its circuit of the fire. I'd hoped it would have showed the effects of the resin by now. By my best guess, it had eaten 6 times a lethal dose. It should rush quickly past the initial stages of euphoria and mania, then would follow delirium, paralysis, coma, and death. By all my calculations, it should be over within an hour, hopefully sooner. I felt a pang of regret as I watched it go about the business of crushing out the scattered fires. It was a magnificent animal. I hated to kill it, even more than I hated to waste upwards of 60 talents worth of Ophelum. But there was no denying what would happen if events were left to run their course. I didn't want the deaths of innocents on my conscience. Soon it stopped eating. It merely rolled on the scattered branches, extinguishing them. It was moving more vigorously now, a sign that the denner was beginning to take effect. It started to grunt, low and deep.
Grunt, grunt.
A wash of blue fire. Roll.
Grunt.
Roll. Finally, there was nothing left but the bed of glimmering coals. As before, the Drakus positioned itself on top of them and laid down, extinguishing all the light on the top of the hill. It lay there quietly for a moment, then grunted again.
Grunt. Grunt.
Wash of fire. It wriggled its belly farther into the coals, almost like it was fidgeting. If this was the onset of mania, it was coming too slowly for my liking. I had hoped that it would be well on its way to delirium by now. Had I underestimated the dosage? As my eyes slowly adjusted to the dark, I realized there was another source of light. At first I thought the clouds had blown over and the moon was peering in from the horizon. But when I turned away from the Drakus to look behind me, I saw the truth. Off to the southwest, barely 2 miles away, Trebon was full of firelight. Not just dim candlelight from windows, there were tall flames leaping everywhere. For a moment I thought the city was ablaze. Then I realized what was happening. The Harvest Festival. There was a tall bonfire in the middle of town, and smaller ones outside the houses where people would be giving cider to the weary workers. They would drink and throw their shamble men into the fires. Dummies made of wheat sheaves, of barley shocks, of straw, of chaff. Dummies built to flare up bright and sudden, a ritual to celebrate the end of the year, something that was supposed to keep demons away. Behind me I heard the Drakus grunt. I looked down at it. Just as I had been, it was facing away from Trebon, towards the dark cliff to the north. I am not a religious person, but I will admit that I prayed then. I prayed earnestly to Telu and all his angels, asking for the Dracus to die, just slide quietly asleep and pass on without turning around to see the city's fires. I waited for several long minutes. At first I thought the Dracus was asleep, but as my eyes sharpened, I could see its head weaving steadily back and forth, back and forth. As my eyes grew more accustomed to the dark, the fires of Trebon seemed to grow brighter. It had been half an hour since it had eaten the resin. Why wasn't it dead yet? I wanted to throw down the rest of the resin, but I didn't dare. If the Dracus turned toward me, it would be facing south toward the town. Even if I threw the sack of resin directly in front of it, it might turn around to resettle itself on the fire. Perhaps if... The Dracus roared then, deep and powerful as before. I had no doubt they heard it in Trebon. I wouldn't have been surprised to learn that they had heard it in Imre. I glanced at Denna. She shifted in her sleep, but didn't wake. The Dracus bounded off the bed of coals, looking for all the world like a frisking puppy. The coals still glimmered in places, giving me enough light to see the great beast roll around, flip, bite at the air, turn. No, I said. No, no, no! It looked out toward Trebon. I could see the leaping flames of the town's fires reflected in its huge eyes. It breathed another gout of blue fire in a high arc, the same gesture it had made before, a greeting or a challenge. Then it was running, tearing down the hillside with demented abandon. I heard it crashing and snapping through the trees, another roar. I thumbed on my sympathy lamp and went to Denna, shaking her roughly. Denna, Denna, you have to get up! She barely stirred. I lifted her eyelid and checked her pupils. They showed none of their earlier sluggishness and shrank quickly in response to the light. That meant the Denna resin had finally worked its way out of her system. This was simple exhaustion, nothing else. Just to be sure, I lifted both lids and brought the light back around again. Yes, her pupils were fine. She was fine. As if to confirm my opinion, Denna scowled fiercely and squirmed away from the light, muttering something indistinct and decidedly unladylike. I couldn't make out all of it, but the words whoremonger and sod off were used more than once. I scooped her up, blankets and all, and carefully made my way down to the ground. I bundled her up again between the arch of the greystones. She seemed to rouse herself slightly as I jostled her around. Denna?
Motev?
She muttered around a mouthful of sleep, her eyes barely moving under her lids. Denna, the Dracus is going down to Trebon. I have to... I stopped. Partly because it was obvious she had dropped back into unconsciousness, but also because I wasn't entirely sure what it was I had to do. I had to do something. Normally the Dracus would avoid a town, but drug-crazed and manic, I had no idea what its reaction to the harvest fires would be. If it rampaged through the town, it would be my fault. I had to do something. I dashed to the top of the greystone, grabbed both bags, and came back down. I upended the travel sack, emptying everything onto the ground. I grabbed the crossbow bolts, wrapped them in my torn shirt, and stuffed them into my travel sack. I threw in the hard iron scale, too, then stuffed the bottle of brand into the oilskin sack for padding, and put that in my travel sack as well. My mouth was dry, so I took a quick swallow of water from the waterskin, recapped it, and left it for Denna. She would be terribly thirsty when she woke up. I slung the travel sack over my shoulder and cinched it tight across my back. Then I thumbed on my sympathy lamp, picked up the hatchet, and began to run. I had a dragon to kill. I ran madly through the woods, the light from my sympathy lamp bobbing wildly, revealing obstacles ahead of me bare moments before I was on top of them. Small wonder that I fell, tumbling down the hill, arse over tea kettle. When I got up, I easily found my lamp, but I abandoned the hatchet, knowing deep in my heart that it wouldn't be of any use against the Drakkers. I fell twice more before I made it to the road, then I tucked my head like a sprinter and ran towards the distant light of the city. I knew the Drakkers could move faster than me, but I hoped it would be slowed by the trees or disoriented. If I made it to the town first, I could warn them. Get them ready. But as the road emerged from the trees, I could see the fires were brighter, wilder. Houses were burning. I could hear the Dracus's near constant bellowing, punctuated by shouting and high-pitched screams. I slowed to a trot as I came into town, catching my breath. Then I scampered up the side of a house to one of the few two-story rooftops so I could see what was really happening. In the town square, the bonfire had been scattered everywhere. Several nearby houses and shops were staved in like rotten barrels, most of them burning fitfully. Fire flickered on the wooden shingles of a handful of roofs. If not for the evening's earlier rain, the town would already be ablaze instead of just a few scattered buildings. Still, it was just a matter of time. I couldn't see the Dracus, but I could hear the great crunching it made as it rolled in the wreckage of a burning house. I saw a gush of blue flame rise high above the rooftops and heard it roar again. The sound made me sweat. Who knew what was going through its drug-addled mind right now? There were people everywhere. Some were simply standing, confused. Others panicked and ran to the church, hoping to find shelter in the tall stone building or the huge iron wheel that hung there, promising them safety from demons. But the church doors were locked, and they were forced to find shelter elsewhere. Some people watched, horrified and weeping from their windows, but a surprising number kept their heads and were forming a bucket line from the town cistern atop the city hall to a nearby burning building. And just like that, I knew what I had to do. It was like I had suddenly stepped onto a stage. Fear and hesitation left me. All that remained was for me to play my part. I jumped to a nearby roof, then made my way across several others until I came to a house near the town square, where a scattered piece of bonfire had set the roof burning. I pried up a thick shingle burning along one edge and took off running for the roof of the town hall. I was only two roofs away when I slipped. Too late, I realized I'd jumped to the inn's roof. No wood shingles here, but clay tiles, slippery with rain. I held tight to the burning shingle as I fell, unwilling to let it go to brace my fall. I slid nearly to the edge of the roof before I came to a stop, heart pounding. Breathless, I kicked off my boots as I lay there. Then, with the familiar feel of rooftop under my calloused feet, I ran, jumped, ran, slid, and jumped again. Finally, I swung myself one-handed by an eavespipe onto the flat stone roof of the town hall. Still clutching the burning shingle, I made my way up the ladder to the top of the cistern, whispering a breathless thanks to whoever had left it open to the sky. As I'd sprinted across the rooftops, the flame on the shingle had gone out, leaving a thin line of red ember along the edge. I puffed it carefully back to life, and soon it was blazing merrily again. I broke it down the middle and dropped half to the flat roof below. Turning to survey the town, I made note of the biggest fires. There were six especially bad ones, blazing up into the dark sky. Elksadal had always said that all fires are one fire, and all fires are the sympathists to command. Very well then, all fires were one fire, this piece of burning shingle. I murmured a binding and focused my Allah. I used my thumbnail to scratch a hasty ul rune onto the wood, then doch, then pessen. In the brief moment it took to do that, the entire shingle was smouldering and smoking, hot in my hand. I hooked my foot around the ladder rung and leaned deep into the cistern, quenching the shingle in the water. For a brief moment, I felt the cool water surround my hand, then it quickly warmed. Even though the shingle was underwater, I could see the faint line of red ember still smouldering along its edge. I pulled out my pocket knife with my other hand and drove it through the shingle into the wooden wall of the cistern, pinning my makeshift piece of sigildry under the water. I have no doubt it was the quickest, most slapdash heat eater ever created. Pulling myself back onto the ladder, I looked around to a town blessedly dark. The flames had dimmed, and in most places had subsided to sullen coals. I hadn't doused the fires, merely slowed them down enough to give the townsfolk and their buckets a fighting chance. But my job was only half done. I dropped to the roof and picked up the other half of the still burning shingle I dropped. Then I slid down a drainpipe and legged it away through the dark streets, across the town square, to the front of the Talin Church. I stopped under the huge oak that stood before the front door, still holding its full array of autumn leaves. Kneeling, I opened my travel sack and brought out the oilskin bag with all the remaining resin. I poured the bottle of brand onto it and set it afire with the burning shingle. It flared up quickly, billowing acrid, sweet-smelling smoke. Then I put the blunt end of the shingle between my teeth, jumped to catch a low branch, and began to climb the tree. It was easier than making my way up the side of a building, and took me high enough to where I could jump to the wide stone window ledge on the church's second floor. I broke off a twig from the oak tree and stuffed it into my pocket. I edged along the window ledge to where the huge iron wheel hung, bolted to the stone of the wall. Climbing that was quicker than a ladder, though the iron spokes were startlingly cold against my still wet hands. I made my way to the top of the wheel, and from there pulled myself onto the flat peak of the highest roof in town. The fires were still dark for the most part, and most of the shouting had died down to sobs and a low murmur of urgent, hurried talk. I took the piece of shingle out of my mouth and blew on it until it was flaming again. Then I concentrated, muttered another binding, and held the oak twig above the flame. I looked out over the town and saw the glimmering coals dim even further. A moment passed. The oak tree below burst into sudden, brilliant flame. It flared brighter than 1,000 torches as all its leaves caught fire at the same time. In the sudden light, I saw the Dracus raise its head 2 streets away. It bellowed and blew a cloud of blue flame, even as it started to run toward the fire. It turned a corner too quickly and caromed wildly into the wall of a shop, smashing through with little resistance. It slowed as it approached the tree, blowing flame again and again. The leaves flared and faded quickly, leaving nothing but 1,000 embers, making the tree look like an immense extinguished candelabrum. In the dim red light, the Dracus was hardly more than a shadow. But I could still see the beast's attention wander, now that the bright flames were gone. The massive wedge of a head swayed back and forth, back and forth. I cursed under my breath. It wasn't close enough. Then the Dracus huffed loud enough for me to hear from where I stood 100 feet above. The head snapped around as it smelled the sweet smoke of the burning resin. It snuffed, grunted, and took another step towards the smoking bag of resin. It didn't show nearly the restraint it had earlier, and practically pounced on it, snapping up the smoldering sack in its great wide mouth. I took a deep breath and shook my head, trying to clear away some of the sluggishness I felt. I had performed 2 rather substantial pieces of sympathy in quick succession, and was feeling rather thick-headed because of it. But, as they say, third time pays for all. I broke my mind into 2 pieces then, with some difficulty into a third. Nothing less than a triple binding would do for this. As the Dracus worked its jaw, trying to swallow the sticky mass of resin, I fumbled in my travel sack for the heavy black scale, then brought the lodestone out from my cloak. I spoke my bindings clearly and focused my Allah. I brought the scale and stone up in front of me until I could feel them tugging at each other. I concentrated, focused. I let go of the lodestone. It shot toward the iron scale. Below my feet was an explosion of stone as the great iron wheel tore free from the church wall. A ton of wrought iron fell. If anyone had been watching, they would have noticed that the wheel fell faster than gravity could account for. They would have noticed that it fell at an angle, almost as if it were drawn to the Dracus, almost as if Talu himself steered it toward the beast with a vengeful hand. But there was no one there to see the truth of things, and there was no god guiding it. Only me. Chapter 81 Pride. Looking down, I saw the Dracus pinned beneath the great wrought iron wheel. It lay motionless and dark in front of the church, and despite the necessity of it all, I felt a pang of regret for killing the poor beast. I had one long moment of exhausted pure relief. The autumn air was fresh and sweet despite the wood smoke, and the stone roof of the church was cool under my feet. Feeling rather smug, I tucked the scale and lodestone back into my travel sack. I drew a deep breath and looked out over the town I had saved. Then I heard a grating noise, and I felt the roof shift beneath me. the front of the building sagged, crumbled, and I staggered as the world fell out from underneath me. I looked for a safe roof to leap to, but there were none close enough. I scrambled backward as the roof disintegrated into a mass of falling rubble. Desperate, I leapt for the charred branches of the oak tree. I grabbed one, but it snapped under my weight. I tumbled through the branches, struck my head, and fell into darkness. Chapter 82 Ash and Elm. I woke in a bed, in a room, in an inn. More than that was not immediately clear to me. It felt exactly like someone had hit me in the head with a church. I'd been cleaned and bandaged, very thoroughly bandaged. Someone had seen fit to treat all my recent injuries, no matter how minor. I had white linen around my head, my chest, my knee, and one of my feet. Someone had even cleaned and wrapped the mild abrasions on my hands and the knife wound from 3 days ago when Ambrose's thugs had tried to kill me. The lump on my head seemed to be the worst of the lot. It throbbed and left me dizzy when I lifted my head. Moving was a lesson in punitive anatomy. I swung my feet off the edge of the bed and grimaced. Deep tissue trauma to the medial pulloni in the right leg. I sat up, oblique strain to the cartilage between the lower ribs. I got to my feet, minor spraining of the sub-trans-damn-what-was-that-called. I pictured Arwill's face, frowning behind his round spectacles. My clothes had been washed and mended. I put them on, moving slowly to savor all the exciting messages my body was sending me. I was glad there wasn't a mirror in the room, knowing I must look completely battered. The bandage around my head was rather irritating, but I decided to leave it on. From the way things felt, it might be the only thing keeping my head from falling into several different pieces. I went to the window. It was overcast, and in the grey light the town looked awful. Soot and ash everywhere. The shop across the street had been smashed like a dollhouse under a soldier's boot. People moved about slowly, sifting through the wreckage. The clouds were thick enough that I couldn't tell what time it was. I heard a faint rush of air as the door opened, and I turned to see a young woman standing in the doorway. Young, pretty, unassuming. The sort of girl that always worked at little inns like this. A Nelly. Nell. The sort of girl who spent her life in a perpetual flinch because the innkeeper had a temper and a sharp tongue and wasn't afraid to show her the back of his hand. She gaped at me, obviously surprised that I was out of bed. "Was anyone killed?" I asked. She shook her head.
"The Leering boy got his arm broke pretty bad, and some folk got burned and such."
I felt my whole body relax.
"You shouldn't be up, sir. The doctor said you weren't likely to wake up at all. You should rest."
Has my cousin come back to town?" I asked. "The girl who was out at the Morthon farm, is she here too?" The young woman shook her head.
"It's just you, sir."
"What time is it?"
"Supper's not quite ready, sir, but I can bring you something if you like."
My travel sack had been left by the side of the bed. I lifted it up onto my shoulder. It felt odd with nothing inside except the scale and lodestone. I looked around for my boots until I remembered I'd kicked them off to get better traction running around the rooftops last night. I left the room with the girl trailing behind me and headed down to the common room. It was the same fellow behind the bar as before, still wearing his scowl. I walked up to him. "My cousin," I said. "Is she in town?" The barman turned the scowl towards the doorway behind me as the young girl emerged.
"Nell, what in God's hell are you doing letting him up? I swear you haven't got the sense God gave a dog."
So her name really was Nell. I would have found that amusing under different circumstances. He turned to me and gave a smile that was really just a different sort of scowl.
"Lord, boy, does your face hurt. It's killing me.
He chortled at his own joke. I glared at him. I asked about my cousin. He shook his head.
She hasn't come back. Good riddance to bad luck, I say.
Bring me bread, fruit, and